Let's go sailing. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt, joined now by Admiral James Stavridis. He is, of course, former Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, former Commander of Southern Command. Admiral, how are you this morning?
Doing well, Hugh, down here in Jacksonville, Florida, where we will not have a convention, and we are glad to hear that.
I was actually disappointed a little bit not to have a convention, but not unhappy about not driving 10 hours from D.C. Admiral, I went out to California last week to host Mike Pompeo at the Nixon Library. He gave a speech which I think was historically significant. What did you make of the secretary's basic realignment of relations with China that he announces the culmination of speeches that include two by the vice president, one by Robert O'Brien, one by Christopher Wray, one by the attorney general? I wouldn't be surprised if the president weighs in, but Mike Pompeo at the Nixon Library really laid it down the wood.
I think he staked out the far side of the new policy, which is to say a very aggressive policy with China. We'll see over time if that holds up or not. There are a lot of imperatives that actually would cause the U.S. and China to converge more than diverge. So let's give it some time. But historically significant, yes, without question. And certainly the most robust offensive speech directed against China in recent memory.
So when the Houston consulate closes at the same time, and the Law of the Sea Treaty is even before he arrived, announced to be enforced in all of its particulars. What is the message that the CCP is receiving from the United States, Admiral?
Well, first of all, and I think this is the right message, is that we will not acquiesce in this preposterous claim of ownership of territoriality for the entire South China Sea, which you well know is the size of the Gulf of Mexico and the Caribbean Sea combined. China does not own it. These are high seas, international waters. And of course, China wants it as the centerpiece of their global strategy. One belt, one road. It's got one problem. It doesn't have the kind of natural resources, oil, gas, that are extant in that South China Sea. So China wants those waters to control those resources. And also because the geography would permit them then to put even more pressure on Taiwan, more pressure on the Philippines, more pressure on Vietnam, more pressure on Thailand coming around the corner. So it's a big, aggressive move by China to claim it. I think the administration is absolutely correct, aligning itself with the international courts, the views of other interlocutors in the region, that this will not stand. And it means we're going to have to continue these freedom of navigation patrols, sending our warships into these waters, our military aircraft flying overhead to demonstrate that we will not acquiesce in this claim of territoriality.
Now, Admiral, the takeaway line from the speech was, and I asked the secretary a few questions after it was done, just like you and I are talking right now. I said, look, I listened to that. It's distrust and verify. It's very difficult to have an arms control regime when you distrust and verify. On the other hand, it's almost de rigueur if you're going to have a serious arms control regime. Do you think disarm and verify is realistic?
I do. And I think that we have for years had similar kinds of approaches with other powers around the world, notably the Soviet Union during the Cold War. I thought it was a nice line by President Reagan to say trust but verify. But in fact, we distrusted and then verified. I think that's really the way great powers have to interact. I do agree that we should press forward and try and get some kind of nascent arms control agreement. And right now, it's to our advantage to do so because China still has an extremely small nuclear arsenal compared to the United States. They have only hundreds of warheads. We have thousands of warheads. We've still got leverage. This would be a good time to do it. The second thing we should do, more at a tactical level, Hugh, than the strategic arms control agreement, is to agree tactical protocols that would separate our warships, separate our combat aircraft when they are operating together on the high seas. We had such protocols with the Soviet Union at the height of the Cold War, and they avoided the kind of inadvertent young commander in command of a destroyer, young lieutenant, hotshot pilot who's going to fly just a little too close to that American ship, gets shot down, inadvertent incident. All of a sudden, we're off to the races with real combat.
Now, let me ask you, Admiral, about the other message of the speech, which was really directed at corporate America. And at the Carlyle Group, you serve as an advisor to a lot of American CEOs, and you've been around, and you know these people. He's saying, if you're dealing with China and you are in any way allowing them to dictate your public policy, your public pronouncements, how do you look in the mirror? Are you allowing the market forces of China, and I think he was speaking here to Hollywood and the NBA specifically, to dictate to you? What do you make of that direct challenge to American CEOs to pick up the ball and get in the game?
I think it is time to make that challenge and also to emphasize to those CEOs and those companies that they will be backed up by the full force and faith of the U.S. government if they take these aggressive positions. And let's start kind of from the outside and work in. I think it's clear to all of us that China should not dictate the way Americans behave in America. They shouldn't try and put constraints on our free speech, as they've tried to do, tried to pressure NBA executives to withdraw comments about human rights in China. That's preposterous, along the same lines as claiming the entire South China Sea. Then there's another zone of how American businesses operate globally outside of China. Again, that is high seas. That's international waters. American businesses should act and do independent operations everywhere globally outside of the United States and outside of China. When you get inside China and you're going to operate inside China, then as a business, you have to make some decisions if you're going to accord to the domestic laws, if you find them particularly onerous, or if you believe that the government is applying excessive force in civil rights, if you believe that human rights are being routinely violated, as I think they clearly are in the case of the Muslim Uyghurs, then you have decisions to make as an American business. And I think what Secretary Pompeo is saying is, when you are operating even inside China, you can't bend a knee and break the value chain that exists for an American corporation. I think that's pretty good advice.
Now, Admiral, two last questions. I put Secretary Pompeo on the spot towards the end of the speech, penultimate question, by saying, I know you're a West Point guy, but this conflict with China is a naval conflict. We are Athens. They are Sparta. They're the land power. Don't we need to begin to reallocate more towards the Navy than from the Army? And he said, that's a tough question for a West Point guy. But he got around to saying yes. I mean, it was a long way, the long and twisting road, as the Beatles would say. But he got around to saying yes. Has that actually occurred to most Army people, that the conflict with the Navy, the conflict with China, is a naval conflict?
I think that clue light is going on. And you could see in the clip you're showing the secretary's kind of uncomfortable initial reaction to it. And by the way, I really encourage your listeners to read the speech, read the Q&A, understand and process it yourself and see how you react to it, because it is a historically significant speech. The West Point graduate to watch, Hugh, frankly, is not Secretary Pompeo, it's Secretary Esper.
That's what he said.
He's a West Point graduate, and I saw the exchange, and I thought Secretary Pompeo ducked his head over and let the bullet go by him, headed back toward Secretary Esper at the Pentagon. But I think, to answer your question, yes, all the services, to include my very good friend, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Mark Milley, who, by the way, is not a West Point graduate, but a Princeton graduate. And they're not just handing out admissions to Princeton. Smart guy.
Is that a degree granting institution, Admiral? I'm not.
Bachelor's only, I think.
I want to go to the last question I asked him, because it's the most important one. George Marshall in 1947, another Secretary of State, and another Army guy, called upon everyone to pick a side in his great Marshall Plan speech at Harvard. He said, you're with us or you're not. I asked Secretary Pompeo if that's the same way, and he said, it's not really are you with America, it's are you with freedom or not. And I asked, can they rely on America if they sign up with America? He said, absolutely. Do you think that degree of certitude is there? Because I sometimes wonder whether our allies aren't afraid we'll go wobbly?
They ought to be a bit concerned about wobbly at the moment, certainly, because we have walked away. We've walked away from supporting Kurds in Syria. We're walking away from Afghanistan. We've pulled out of multiple international treaties. Now, we could argue and debate each of those one by one, whether those were all good moves or not. But if you're an international observer looking at the current pattern of America, there does seem to be a kind of consistency of withdrawal, a tendency to come back within our own borders. I think that's a mistake. We could, again, argue about the eaches and ores of this, the apples and the oranges of each decision. But collectively, we need to send the signal, as Secretary Pompeo did in answering your question, that we will be reliable. We will engage in the world. We are not going to return to the late 20s and early 30s of the last century, where we literally came home, rejected the League of Nations, cracked the global economy with a trade war. How'd that work out? We ended up in the Second World War because we came home in large measure. So let's avoid that.
Last question, Admiral. Do you think the paradigm for the foreseeable future is a China-U.S. paradigm? Everybody else, Russia, Iran, North Korea, all the other conflicts around the world, Turkey and Libya, it all comes within the framework of China-U.S. Do you agree with that basic understanding of the world?
I think that the most important major geopolitical movement of the first half of the 21st century will certainly be U.S. and China. I think as you get into the second half of the 21st century, we ought to be talking about India, what's happening with that other major power, which will emerge over time. And I think it's too soon to really write off the European Union as a potential collective actor whose economy is bigger than ours, whose population is bigger than ours, even with the withdrawal of Great Britain. So there will be other actors, and certainly some of the smaller countries you mentioned will operate in and out of that China frame. But to your point, we just saw Iran effectively sign up with China on One Belt, One Road. I think that's a good example of the trend line ahead of us. It's why it is all the more important that we have a strategic plan for dealing with China. Whether you agree or not with the sketch that the administration has laid out, it's a start in putting a plan together. Let's have a national conversation about it. We need to confront China where we must. There'll be zones where we can cooperate, but we need a strategic plan for dealing with China.
Admiral James Stavridis, is always a pleasure. Follow him on Twitter at StavridisJ. Also, AdmiralStavOnline.com, AdmiralStav.com.